Coffee House Shots is sponsored by NatWest Group, principal banking partner of the Global Climate Change Summit, COP26, in Glasgow later this year. NatWest is helping its customers reduce their carbon emissions by joining forces with organisations like Microsoft, identifying energy-saving methods for small and medium enterprises. Find out more about their approach to climate change at natwestgroup.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Well, today an inspectorate report on the Metropolitan Police's actions at the vigil for Sarah Everard concluded that the police acted appropriately when they were photographed handcuffing women on the ground. Katie, are you surprised by the findings of this report?
Well, I think when the decision was made to obviously push this to a watchdog to look into it, it felt like it was a point when lots of people were very upset, emotions were riding high, and there was a lot of anger. And almost by delaying probably a search into what exactly happened, you would calm things down and potentially make it easier, I think, for Cressida Dick and her force. But yeah, I do think it's surprising. I think that most people who saw the images from that night thought there was definite overreach. I think, however, there is also something else going on, which is, and I think it's come to light a bit more, almost this disconnect between politicians and how the police acted. So I think there do seem to be issues in terms of the judgment in that place. We've heard Cressida Dick probably saying, though, that people like me, armchair critics, you know, she doesn't really care because she's going to stand by her police before they had this review. And obviously it is harder to, I think, for someone who doesn't have the experience, it's hard to judge exactly. But clearly it did look pretty controversial, some of the things. But I do think it goes back to this point, which is the police, while there was some overreach, were also just ultimately putting into force questionable legislation, which lots of these politicians did back and vote for. And at the time, there were warnings in some of these debates, particularly from certain Tory backbenchers, who are often seen as to being very far gone in the lockdown debate, about the problems of rushing this type of legislation through. So I don't think that anyone comes out of the episode particularly well.
James, some people have been saying, well, this report from Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services would say that, wouldn't they? What's the impact, do you think, on the policing bill that's going through the Commons at the moment?
I think the sections on protest in the policing bill, I think, are disproportionate. I think we shouldn't put individual police officers into routinely having to make calls on whether the level of noise from a protest kind of reaches a level which would be intimidatory or not. These are too vague, this language and this criteria. And I think, as Katie says, you know, you saw the problem with badly drafted law in the way that the Sarah Everard vigil ended up being broken up. And I think there is an issue here, which is that some of these hardline kill the bill protesters in Bristol and the violence there, they are in danger of making a bad piece of legislation look more acceptable than it is. I'm always wary when people want new laws to deal with things. There is an offence of obstructing the Queen's Highway. If people are stopping newspapers from being delivered, that is an offence. And there is a danger here but also I think the other point is this: in living in a democracy sometimes does lead to kind of inconvenience. I think we should be wary about clampdowns on protest that are so draconian as to stifle the boisterousness of democracy, or I think set worrying precedents. I think there is an issue here sometimes, which is Davey actually makes this point in his interview with Katie in the forthcoming issue of the magazine, which is, you know, there is a point here that I think sometimes we can be very slightly complacent about how entrenched democracy is here, and we should wonder whether we would feel as comfortable, not just in an authoritarian state, but, you know, if this law was being proposed in Poland, for example, would we feel as comfortable with it as we feel here? And I think there is a point here about that these laws do send out kind of international messages. And I think that the language is too vague. And I think the right thing for the Commons to do in report stage would be to impose, you know, if you are going to have these curbs on protest, there needs to be kind of far more rigour, legal rigour, about what the definition is, rather than these very vague terms that the bill uses.
Katie, from your conversations with Tory MPs, do you get the impression that ministers are listening to these concerns that backbenchers have also been expressing?
To a very limited degree, I don't think there is too much of a sense. And I think it goes back, there's a certain level of exasperation when it comes to these interventions. And it does fit in with wider COVID legislation, but obviously we're also talking about the police bill here, that because the government is not really under pressure in terms of the numbers, in terms of the parliamentary arithmetic, I think there is just a sense that while they may be in listening mode, it's not really too much of a hunger or an urgency to find a common ground or a compromise or move a bit more that way. Therefore, it does feel, I think, from those involved, more like listening exercises.
I also think that there's another point here, which is the state has taken on so much power and so many curbs on our civil liberties and our freedoms in handling this pandemic. But, you know, I think the state should almost take a self-denying ordinance about taking more powers right now. I think that we need to, when we come out of lockdown, I think we need a kind of period of rebalancing as both individuals and the police and government get back to where we were before in terms of the balance of rights and powers between the state and the individual. And I think to have a draconian law on protest that even encompasses kind of single person protest, it would, I think, be the wrong start to that new era.
And James, just on breaches of some of the restrictions during this pandemic, there's been a decision in Northern Ireland today not to prosecute 24 Sinn Féin politicians who had been investigated for alleged breaches of the coronavirus regulations at the funeral of the former IRA member Bobby Storey. What does this mean?
So this led to Arlene Foster breaking off joint press conferences with the Sinn Féin Deputy First Minister of Northern Ireland, Michelle O'Neill, who was one of the attendees at this funeral. I think the problem is, if this is not a breach of what the lockdown guidance then was and the sheer numbers of people there, you know, what is? And it's obviously a particularly emotive breach because lots of people couldn't have the funerals that they wished to have. And this was a flagrant flouting of those restrictions. And I think that it is hard not to think that the decision not to prosecute is in some ways influenced by the political factors of it. That has obviously made this decision political. So you've got Arlene Foster calling on the head of the Northern Ireland Police Force to resign over the matter. I mean, it is just a reminder of, obviously the politics of Northern Ireland, but also, you know, the issue of how do you police these laws that make illegal things that were in normal times perfectly legal, like large funeral gatherings. And I think there is a level of public anger when they see people flouting the rules and there not being a consequence for those people because they are deemed to be kind of too powerful to hold to account.
And Katie, finally, Michael Gove has been trying to sell one of the things that ministers hope might take us out of at least some of the restrictions, which is vaccine passports or vaccine certificates, as ministers would rather call them. Explain what he's been up to.
Yes, this is another listening exercise from the government.
Lots of listening going on.
So here. Much listening. But some MPs on this call felt as though they perhaps weren't being listened to. And instead, in Michael Gove's session, which had cross-party MPs in it, that ultimately, I think the impression from several of those who attended when they left this was that the government has decided there will be immunity IDs. Now, clearly Number 10 was saying, well, nothing's been decided. There are reviews. But the indication was, yes, that will be happening. And the question is, ultimately, what form? How does it work? And it was an exercise where obviously trying to hear thoughts from those in attendance. But I think, ultimately, given that Michael Gove is looking over the review, we're almost more interested in what he's thinking on it than necessarily some of the MPs on the call. And one part is, I mean, we've had Matt Hancock say quite recently, we're not a papers please country. I think that people said, well, that comment's not going to age well, given they now seem to be leaning towards immunity IDs. Well, we're going to be an app please country, because it's all going to be about an app if they have their way. I think the fact this app is being designed, or at least worked on, by the same people who worked on the Test Trace app hasn't filled MPs with high levels of confidence or faith.
But if you don't want immunity certificates, you probably should be quite encouraged by that.
Yeah, because, well, there's good news for Steve Baker. Ed Davey can celebrate. But ultimately, and I think what's quite interesting actually is there's almost two criticisms, I think, at least in the Tory party on this. So one is civil liberties, individual freedoms, and the idea that this could lead to segregated society. Lots of people saying, well, aren't vaccines a game changer? It feels as we're getting vaccines, but actually we're going to have more bureaucracy and layers in our lives, even if it does mean you could perhaps not socially distance once you're in a pub. And then secondly, the other thing I'm starting to pick up on is lots of people think, yes, the vaccine programme has been a big success, but that was the exception, not the rule. And perhaps ministers are a little bit high on the success of the vaccine programme, and now I think they can do all these brilliant big projects, from the app to also just things like, for example, if you were doing rapid tests. So we believe what is being considered is, if you don't have a vaccine, you could still do some of these things if you had perhaps antibodies, perhaps a negative test. So, but to do these rapid tests, as some tool, you know, could be outside a pub, you might do a test and you get a quick response. I think there are concerns about the actual logistics of this. And I think in terms of the really live part of this debate, what are vaccine IDs actually used for? Because yes, we had the comments from the Prime Minister last week at the liaison committee on passports for pints. But I think that those involved in drawing up the policy, or at least perhaps the communications on it too, do think that logistically, if you bring in something like that, it would be very complicated. And actually focusing it more on mass events, whether that is a stadium gig, a wedding, things like that, would be a more targeted way of doing it, and probably easier to handle in terms of state capability.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.